This is Jennifer Hill, and the show is Finding Common Ground, Belfast Community Radio, WBFY 100.9 FM, Belfast, Maine. We are streaming live from the basement of Waterfall Arts. This is a call-in program, and our number is 338-2277. For those streaming online at belfastcommunityradio.org, the area code is 207. We are open to questions or comments. Today, we are having the studio with us, with me, actually, there's just the two of us here, Thomas Kittredge. And Thomas has served as the Economic Development Director for the City of Belfast for 8 years, helping existing businesses and attracting new businesses and visitors to Belfast. He is the Vice President of the Belfast Creative Coalition.
Yes,
oh, well, quite
good.
A distinction. So, yeah. I love that group. And the chair of Our Town Belfast. Not anymore.
Sorry.
All right. No problem. That was my fault because I did get the more current one. But in the last minute, I did this. But I assume that you still hold a BA from Yale University in Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations and in Archaeological Studies.
Yep.
And you hold an MA from the Johns Hopkins University in Near Eastern Studies. Welcome to the program, Thomas.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer. Yeah. Pleasure to be here.
So before we get to talking about economic development, I'd love to hear more about your studies in Near Eastern Languages and Civilizations. In fact, I'd like to devote a whole show in the future to the topic. But just for today, what are we talking about, ancient?
Yes. It was kind of random how I got there. My background, I grew up in Brewer High School, class of 94. Then I was fortunate enough to get into Yale University and went there. And originally I was a biochemistry major my first year, and I realized I hated doing organic chemistry labs. So I kind of started looking for...
You and 99% of the population.
It's like, this isn't fun. And luckily I started looking, and archaeology was something I think I had read about as a kid. I was trying to figure out, or maybe I saw Indiana Jones one too many times and thought it was too exciting. And Yale had an archaeological studies major. And then I got interested in that. And as I got into my sophomore year, I started studying more of that. And then I decided, well, maybe I should specialize in a culture. And ancient Egypt was the first one that popped in my head, but I might have read some books about it. My aunt had a book about ancient Egypt that I remember fondly. And luckily at Yale, had a lot of resources devoted to ancient Egypt. A lot of universities in the country will teach ancient Egyptian art as part of a larger art history course. But Yale was fortunate, maybe one of 10 places in the country that actually had dedicated faculty. So I really threw myself into it and did those two majors for my BA. And then I was fortunate enough, I worked at the Yale Art Gallery for their small Egyptian collection. I got to go to Egypt my junior year and work on some archaeological excavations.
Now, do you speak Egyptian?
I could read. We're not really sure how the ancient Egyptian was spoken, but I certainly was able to read the various phases of it. I could read hieroglyphics. I'm a little bit rusty now. It's been a while. I got to go to Egypt my junior year, work on archaeological excavations in Giza and Abydos. And I worked at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston as an intern. Their Egyptian department, they have a very large collection.
My God, that's so fascinating.
And I wanted to be a museum curator for a long time. And went to grad school. I was very focused on getting into grad school. Got into Johns Hopkins, a very good program.
Another big school.
Yep, down in Baltimore. And but known for Egyptian art. Betsy Bryan is a leader in that field, and she was on the faculty there. And got there, and then I had this existential crisis, like, am I going to do this the rest of my life? And I stuck it out for 3 years, got my master's, but really you need to have a PhD to have a career in that field.
Right.
And it's still very fond to me, but I had a change of heart once I got to grad school, but stuck it out and got the master's.
So so are you following what's going on in Syria in terms of how climate change and drought affected that country's civil war? Have you been following all that?
Sadly, no.
Oh, wow. Because it's so interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I would say the Middle East is a much different place even than when I haven't been there since 2001 in Egypt, even before that was before Arab Spring.
Yeah.
And I also spent one summer working in Israel on archaeological excavation after my freshman year, Ashkelon, Israel. And the Middle East is a very interesting place, but I've not been there since 2001.
So are there any lessons you learned in history that are relevant to Belfast today?
I
don't want you to think back too hard.
Well, no, I mean, I think certainly I could say, look, my degrees have nothing to do with what I currently do, though I think when you do archaeology and history, you are looking at oftentimes combining different types of information to come up with a conclusion or a story or an evaluation. I think those types of skills, maybe they're not suited. Maybe they're not just specific.
So
to
you're talking
Egypt.
Storytelling.
Well, I don't know about storytelling, but we have to look at, I have to look at different types of information when we develop a project or ascertain something.
Words and numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say that's my most direct connection because okay. I often I'm upfront and say, look, I hardly use my degree now at all. They're great. And now that I have an office, I can put them up on the wall. It's a great wall decoration, but I don't use that. But it's still something I'm very interested in on a personal basis.
Let's talk about your day job then. Let's go into that. You've been here for 8 years and Belfast is surging into the future in a big way. I have to say, it's refreshing to talk to a man who is devoted simply to economic development. I mean, that's just it, right? All balls to the wall. Can you say that?
It's your show. Now, I'm also the airport manager for Belfast Municipal Airport. That is certainly a certain portion of my time
is
the airport. But I certainly have an economic development perspective related to the airport, and I support.
How'd you get that job?
I was given that job soon after I started as economic development director.
They just needed it.
I think the airport does, need some management. I knew nothing about airports other than a purchaser of airline tickets before I got
it. But you're a learner and
yes.
you figured it out.
Yeah. I know enough to be, I don't know, I wouldn't say dangerous, but FAA is a very, complicated organization. I work with a lot of different federal agencies, and FAA might be the most complicated one of the ones I work with.
Really?
Plus the added element of safety. Safety is always a concern in running an airport and having it be safe, which is not something I have to worry about as much.
Do they have air traffic controllers in Belfast?
No, we are a non-towered airport. It's a public access 24/7, 365. You actually can turn on.
That's another show I could have.
Yeah, sure, of course. We can talk about airports, but people can fly in and out. They will. Bangor Tower does regulate our airspace to some degree, so people will file flight plans and talk to Bangor Tower, but they don't call me up at City Hall and say, I'm coming to the airport. Or if they did, I'd say, well, that's great. Fly safe. And you can access, pilots can turn on the runway lights at night from their radios, from their aircraft.
Oh, cool.
It's all remote. And that's the vast majority of airports in the state of Maine are like Belfast. And there's only a handful like Bangor in that respect. Very, very few. Yeah. Bangor, Portland, that have the towers. We don't have a tower.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Happy to talk about the airport in the future too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about, economic development, no holes barred.
Sure.
I ask you that. Is that correct? Do you seek out all economic opportunity, or do you have a list of criteria?
Certainly, we support businesses that are legal and can be permitted.
Oh, that's so good.
Let's put it that way.
No illegal businesses.
No illegal. Well, let's start.
You're
with
a grant writer. I can tell that.
I would say that our focus, whether intentional or just the circumstance, our focus really has been on business retention and expansion. We don't, and that's because I think we've had so many opportunities, people that have already been here and want to expand their business, or they've already decided they like Belfast and they want to do something, and they're coming in our doors. We don't see the need. We haven't felt a strong super need yet to do any kind of expensive out-of-state marketing campaigns. We really focus on the existing businesses we have here, the ones that have already said they want to be here. We're not out there trying to hustle them now.
Right.
The exception is Maine & Company is an entity that we have worked with successfully in the past. They helped bring Athena Health to Belfast on process technology, and they are also involved in the current Nordic Aqua Farms project. And so in those cases,
what is Maine & Company? Is that a nonprofit?
They're a quasi-governmental nonprofit that they are given, their purview is really any kind of sizable, legitimate, out-of-state business attraction interest.
Where are they out of?
I believe they have an office in Portland.
Portland.
But they work around the state. And our goal really, I think, is to continue a relationship with them so they know what opportunities we have in Belfast so that when they have something, they can potentially say, well, maybe Belfast is a good fit. They've treated us very well. And just between Athena Health and On Process Technology, That's probably close to 1,000 jobs.
So do you, history. Do you have a contact with them? Somebody yeah. you call and you're friendly with and have yes. coffee with? And
yeah. Yeah. yeah they have a staff of three. Pierre Del Greco is their CEO. Ashley Pringle works for them. I'm not sure exactly what her staff yeah. title is, and I believe they have administrative assistant as well. Not okay. a huge operation, but they've certainly been involved in those types of efforts.
So let me ask you this. Is there any size business that would be too big for Belfast?
Oh, good question. I don't know. Certainly, well, I guess we'll talk about Nordic Aqua Farms, because that certainly would be at a 40-acre development size, or the 40 acres they have an option to acquire. That's going to be, if not the biggest, but one of the biggest up there. It depends how you view the MBNA campus and how it currently is in terms of, it's definitely going to be large for the city of Belfast. Then again, it's only 0.1% of the total land mass of Belfast. So
it's not going to take over the whole city.
I think it's important to put it in perspective. Again, it would be large for Belfast, but still, Belfast is 36 square miles or so of land. So no, I don't have a specific,
you would take anything.
Well,
come on.
Let me rephrase. I don't think we are at the point where we are too big yet. In my opinion, I don't have a number. It's more just based on
that's okay. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. So how closely do you work with the city council as people come and go on the council? Do your priorities change, and
How much influence do I have with them?
Yeah.
I'm it depends. Sometimes I feel like I do. My goal is really to advise the council. There, I don't get to make decisions. It's the council that gets to make decisions.
Let me just interrupt. Sure. You have a relationship with the folks at Main and Company, and they come in with a proposal for a place, and then you don't have it. You don't say yes or no. That's
well, they might ask
role.
My opinion, and
they ask your opinion.
Then. Yeah, Main and Company does, and the city council may. I can't recall if they've asked my opinion on the Nordic Rock Farms project. I've certainly expressed my support for the project based on my understanding of it. My job is to advise the council. I think that certainly priorities have probably shifted a little bit. You know, I've been here 8 years. We've had largely a stable council. I've had a lot of the same council members throughout the entire 8 years, or a majority of it. I think they're generally, the council has been generally development or pro-development overall, though they have differing priorities amongst them. So it's been very enjoyable to work with them over those 8 years. If I had a council that was harshly anti-development, that might be a different story.
That might be hard for the economic development director.
Yeah. But we do our best to, but I certainly have city councilors will pop into my office. I think they're as interested about as any department as they are about economic development. So they have strong ideas and preferences and thoughts on it. And I do listen to them very often. I have a lot of conversations with them one-on-one about their priorities for economic development.
Okay. This is Jennifer Hill. The show is Finding Common Ground, and we're here today with Thomas Kittredge, Belfast Economic Development Director. My next question. City councilors are touting the proposed Nordic Aqua Farm for Belfast as an economic boon to residents, as their taxes will fall due to the tax revenue coming in from the new business. And I've heard a few people say that their taxes have never gone down when MBNA came, or Front Street Shipyard, or any of the promised. Is that true? Or
I'm not going to be able to speak about MBNA because that was before my time. Let's talk about Front Street Shipyard. Let me back up.
Yeah.
What people see for their mill rate and their ultimately their tax bill, because their tax bill is based on their assessed value times the mill rate, is a function of both the size of our tax base and the amount of money we need to raise. So a project like Nordic Aqua Farm, so the city of Belfast's entire tax base is about $750 million, $750 million. And so a project like Nordic Aqua Farms that is talking about phase one, $150 million investment, will necessarily broaden the tax base. If spending does not increase, taxes will go down. Now, if the city council decides to spend more money,
is that what happened with Front Street Shipyard?
Well, I'll go to Front Street Shipyard. That's only about a $15 million project. So 15 to versus 750 is a pretty small impact. And again, there's a lot of different elements that go into what people's tax bill is, because we've faced things like rising school budget, rising assessment for right. the school budget, decrease in municipal revenue sharing. So it's entirely possible that people could have, there could have been in absence of those other factors, you would have seen a small decrease because of Front Street Shipyard, but because of all these other factors and other initiatives by the city council, you don't see that. So it's easy to say, well, Front Street Shipyard didn't do anything. That's not Front Street Shipyard's fault.
No, it wouldn't be Nordic. Front Street Shipyard was $15 million.
Yep.
And
thereabouts, yeah.
And you were saying that
they're talking about they're for phase one of Nordic Aqua Farms. That's about 10 times the investment, $150 million. And if they do phase two, you're approaching $400 to $500 million in investment. Now, obviously,
that's like half of our entire budget.
Right.
That's pretty big.
Now, not every dollar of investment translates into a dollar of assessed value. And that's a conversation I have with Brent Martin, the city assessor, about how that actually translates.
Have to have him on.
Sure. Very interesting stuff that he does. So,
yeah. So you say that these two entities brought in 1,000 jobs. Main and Company brought in the MBNA and the...
No, the Athena Health.
Sorry, Athena Health and the On...
On Process Technology.
Those two... How much did they invest in comparison for this new thing is going to be 60 jobs, but they're investing $150 million.
Yep. I don't have...
It's mostly a dollar thing more than jobs, it sounds like.
I would say the bigger impact is the increase to the tax base as opposed to... Now, 60 jobs is nothing to sneeze at.
No.
60 jobs puts you in the top 20 biggest employers in the city of Belfast. And if they go to the 120 or 140, if they do phase two, that would put them in the top 10, more or less. I don't have the numbers for Athena Health. They bought an existing building. They certainly made some investments, probably over a few million dollars, but I don't know. On Process Technology has probably invested $2 or $3 million. So certainly...
But they had a big impact on the jobs.
They have about a couple hundred jobs with On Process,
well,
and about 900 with Athena Health. So in those cases, the ratio of job to invested money was higher for Athena, and it's kind of the opposite with Nordic Aqua Farms.
It's more money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
But again, 60 jobs is nothing to...
No, poo-poo. I'm not sneezing. I'm not sneezing at that. What sort of risks are associated with a business that fails? I heard somewhere 90% of new businesses fail. Some crazy statistic like that. And does it fall on the citizenry to clean up with what remains? Now, this is not... Nordic is going to be a giant facility, and we hope them the best.
Yep.
But if that fails and they can't pay to clean it up, who would take care of that?
Well, certainly it's not fair to say it's a situation where they just leave and nothing happens. Oftentimes these assets are owned by their creditors that may choose to repurpose or resell the property to another entity to do something that the property can be reused for.
This particular facility, what would you put in there? I mean, it's giant.
Another fish farm. I don't know.
It's a hypothetical.
I will admit it is probably more specialized than a typical
office
straight shed, you know? Yeah. We have not to this point, I believe, we don't require a decommissioning fund to be set up. I think we've done something in the past related to cell towers. I think Wayne Marshall would know more about that, but we generally have not put that type of thing in there, even though those assets, we don't always end up with the assets that it's our responsibility. Oftentimes the assets will be sold or transferred to someone else that can make productive use out of it. If that can't happen and there are cleanup things, certainly we take advantage of the EPA Brownfields program in the city of Belfast. We've had we have a lot of, obviously, a history of industry and development in Belfast. We had a gas station on every corner, it seems like, back in the day, and with associated
a lot of cleanup
environmental issues.
That.
So the EPA, I think it's a very well-supported program, the Brownfields program. So we've had money to assess sites on behalf of prospective purchasers to delineate, define those environmental constraints, put cost estimates based on reuses, and we've helped people get cleanup funding through the EPA or Maine Department of Environmental Protection to be able to, because I'd like to see existing infrastructure reused as opposed to building brand new stuff.
Right. I'm thinking of a movie I saw in Flint, Michigan, with where all this infrastructure for automobiles, and then they left, and all the infrastructure is still there because the businesses, I guess they failed or they moved to another country or something like that. And I'm just wondering, in the very end, if the business was to fail, whose responsibility? It would be the citizens of Belfast to either fall in your office.
I don't know about responsible, but certainly the citizens of Belfast would feel some impact if there was a big albatross of an unused, decrepit building. Yes, I mean, but whether or not it's their responsibility, I mean, yes, it would probably, I would certainly be, I mean, one of the people to look at and say, how can we reuse this? How can we put this back into productive use? Or do we find ways to find federal funding to remove a building or clean up a site if there is actual environmental contamination?
I just wondered about that. When considering a proposal from a business, do you consider the hidden costs, such as the price of dealing with waste? That's kind of an ancillary question to the one before.
When you say waste, you mean legacy environmental contamination, or you mean things like wastewater or?
Well, for example, I know that Belfast, didn't you I live in Waldo.
It's okay.
didn't you just pass a styrofoam so that's a waste that's coming from a business?
Yep.
So when you're the economic development director, so I was wondering if you consider the hidden costs of disposing of that cup or, you know, there's...
No, I have not. I would say I have not. Certainly I have not been able to quantify that to be able to put that into a...
Typically, economists don't.
I am aware of things like, you know, external costs, external benefits, and certainly related to the fossil fuel industry and things like that. But on a Belfast-specific project, no. I mean, some of those things are sometimes dealt with fees if people are using wastewater through the sewer, you know, the wastewater fees or things like that.
But not really beyond, like, the
no.
disposal of whatever, yeah.
No, I have not done that.
So very good. So do you believe in global warming?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I guess it's a belief now. They ask, do you believe or not?
There's
a science, but a lot of people don't believe the science.
I believe that and humans are largely responsible for that. And we need to find ways to be better with our resources and be able to lower our carbon footprint and be able to preserve the environment.
Okay. So I know a big part of your work is writing grants.
Yep.
What percentage of your time is spent doing this? I guess you're also running the airport, so.
It varies. I mean, a lot of these things kind of go in waves. I might go all in on a grant for a week trying to make a deadline. Not that I plan poorly. I tend to use every single available minute to really fine tune a grant. And I think we've been very successful.
Yes, you have been.
I've been the lead writer on grants. We've gotten about 87% of the money we've asked for.
I wanted to ask you about the major grants the city's gotten from your efforts.
You can tout it. I think it's definitely a significant portion, you know, probably in excess of 10% writing, and probably more than that is grant management. It's not just writing the grant, it's all the compliance to maintain your reputation with a federal or state agency and to ensure that you... do what you said you're going to do with the grant, and that's usually pretty involved. Grants we have written that I've written or that we've gotten. The biggest one was the $1.9 million grant from the Economic Development Administration, which is part of the Department of Commerce. It's a federal grant, and that was used to rebuild Front Street, reconstruct and rebuild and strengthen Front Street from Main Street down to Pier Street.
Yeah,
to benefit Front Street Shipyard, Penobscot McCrum and other businesses that may be down there. But those two businesses definitely helped us make the case to the federal government for that money. That was about a $4 million project, and the Water District contributed about $600,000. So the city's share was about 1.3 or about one third of the total project cost. We've received two grants from Community Development Block Grant Housing Assistance Grants to improve housing occupied by low to moderate income individuals. We've received two $300,000 grants back in 2011, 2014.
Slow down a little bit. The one before, can you say that one again? It was about housing.
Yes, we received, Community Development Block Grant, or CDBG is the acronym.
Yeah.
We, back in 2011 and 2014, we got two, each of those years, we got a $300,000 grant to improve housing occupied by low to moderate income individuals.
Where did that money go?
That went to property owners that...
Slumlords?
Well, no, they had to be in good standing, and we had a committee, advisory committee, that I served on to review applications, and we looked at things like how much match we asked for match, whether it could be in kind or cash. But they would do anything from energy efficiency to windows or kitchens or life and safety issues. We made it pretty broad in terms of the activities, but the goal was to improve it for units occupied by people that met a certain income level. And we did about, I'd have to look at the numbers, I think we improved in excess of 100 units in Belfast through those two grants over maybe 20 or 25 different properties.
So are there slumlords in Belfast?
From what I've heard, I believe there are. There are people that feel their landlords are not responsive to their needs.
And so did some money go to help them get up to snuff? In terms of,
I'd have to look. I think I believe that we did not. If we knew someone was a slumlord, we did not give them a grant. Also, we did not give grants to property owners that were delinquent on their taxes. That excluded people from that. I think we had a pretty good. Plus, we had a consultant, Ron Harriman, was our consultant for the grant, and the committee looked at those applications quite seriously.
And so have you got a story for us about how that affected the real life world of people? Like, do you know where that money went? Maybe you don't even know. You're probably in the rarefied air of the grant.
No, I have a spreadsheet back on my office computer that says, you know, we spent it on this, and I have all the invoices and things like that. I've done a couple cursory tours, not inside the units, but usually around the exteriors. Ron Harriman took me around. It was just a matter of time. But I know Ron Harriman spoke to several of the property owners and may have also heard from the tenants themselves. But
to have him on the program.
Sure. I don't have a specific story about that.
That's okay.
But we thought it was important to do that. Even though it didn't create new units, it was important to improve the units that we already had.
And so you had $600,000 over those two years.
And we may apply for another one in the near future. That program still exists, and we think there may still be a need for that.
And that's coming from the block grant from the federal government.
Yeah, it starts as federal money. It's paid for by federal income taxes, but it's administered by the state of Maine.
Yeah.
And they set the more specific guidelines.
And so you were on a trajectory of all the – that
yes.
was just the second one. Yeah,
sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. The next one, we helped On Process Technology get an $800,000 CDBG Economic Development Program grant, which they use for working capital, equipment, and training costs, in which they had to match with at least one-to-one match, but I think they matched it with about $1.3 million of their own money.
And did they start in Belfast?
No, they're based in Ashland, Massachusetts, but this was a new facility.
Yeah.
In Belfast, and they had to create, I believe, 50 new jobs, and they surpassed that. They have almost 200. I think they created over 100, and more than 51% of them had to be taken by low to moderate income individuals, which they did meet. So they did. We do have a letter from the state that says we met the requirements of that particular grant. Also, a $500,000 CDBG Downtown Revitalization Grant, which
you're
we used.
Good with a CDBG.
Yes, yeah, it's it's my bread and butter, I'd say.
You've got that down pat.
Yeah, that was to do our cross street improvement project from a few years ago across Spring and Miller Streets, to improve those areas with lighting and parking and sidewalks, and to connect the parks of Belfast Common with Main Street better. And I think it's helped support things like the United Farmers Market. Development mm-hmm. took place after that. We got $200,000, another CDBG Economic Development Grant for Front Street Shipyard a few years ago, for which they used to purchase a crane for unstepping masts and a custom paint booth.
And did you write that one?
Yes.
For them?
Yeah, these are all ones. These are all ones I've written.
Wow.
Yeah.
These businesses must love you.
Well, they don't hate me, I guess. So, I mean, it works best when these grants, especially with these private businesses, it has to be a partnership. I don't do 100% of it. I don't know their business as well as they do, so they have to give me information about and how to make that case.
Well, that just makes sense.
But yeah, it works best when it's a partnership and they understand up, and we try to understand there are compliance things you have to do to comply and record keeping and things like that. It's not just, you're not going to hear from us. And so, there's a public awareness part of it. They want to see that the community knows, at least knows about this, if not supports this as well. And so let businesses know about that.
Okay. This is Belfast Community Radio, WBFY 100.9 FM in Belfast, Maine. We're streaming live at belfastcommunityradio.org. I sound like an airline stewardess when I say that.
I have a couple more. I'll mention a couple more grants.
And we are listening to Thomas Kittredge. Economic Development Director for Belfast. Go.
$150,000 CDBG Micro Enterprise Assistance Grant that was used for small grants to micro assistance to micro enterprises, and also to facade improvement grants.
Just a moment. Okay. Well, we have a caller, so hold on.
Okay.
Hello, caller. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, a very interesting discussion here today, and I'm wondering. I don't want to get too political here, but I'm just wondering if you've seen any evidence that the tax cuts the federal government made have had any impact on the local economy there. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question, sir. No, I don't have any specific. I have not had a specific conversation with one of our businesses about the tax cuts and that's effect. So I really don't know if that's made any noticeable difference in the economy of Belfast.
Did you know you were going to be this good of a grant writer? You just had it.
My previous job was Piscataquis County Economic Development Council Executive Director, and I had to write grants. And I think it's more of a science than an art. I think there's a process, and I think I've learned a few things how to be more effective writing grants. But I think a lot of people can learn if they can write. And I usually I review a lot of grants for other people and give them advice, give them feedback. So we had $150,000 CDBG microenterprise grant. And then we've gotten the other funding source we've used a lot is EPA Brown Environmental Protections Agency Brownfields Program. We've received three grants for assessment totaling $1 million. That's used just to assess properties to do cleanup planning. And that's done free of charge to the owner, the prospective purchaser. Ransom Consulting out of Portland does the various, environmental work. And that's to set up sites for cleanup and redevelopment. We've also, I wrote a $200,000 cleanup grant for the 45 Front Street Belfast Yard site, or people calling where the Belfast Maskers used to be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, darn. Mike Curley's poking his head in the window.
Let's try to ignore him.
Yeah, I'll try.
Difficult. So
that was used for cleaning up that site down by the waterfront next to Front Street Shipyard. And then also wrote a $200,000 grant on behalf of Waldo County Government for the old sheriff's house. And that was cleaned up as well. I think that's most of them.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good.
It's about $5.5 million.
We're proud of you, Thomas.
Thank you. It's about $5.5 million over the past 8 years.
So, in your work, you need to know a lot about the federal government and how it works so you can plug into the needs of Belfast and what's being offered. It's a view that affords an understanding of both government and business. How do you think systems could improve? If you had a magic wand, what would you do to change how people organize themselves?
Oh, my God.
Take all the time you need. I mean, one thing I've noticed in grant writing is that it seems ridiculous to me, some of the hoops that you have to go through to get this money. I mean, good causes have to have good grant writers, yet there are really good ideas that, I don't know, to me, like the whole grant thing, I don't know. What do
well,
you think?
Well, I think a lot of those regulations come after the fact that someone has found a way to exploit a grant and a regulation is imposed to eliminate that in the future. I think there are, without any specifics, I think we probably are a little bit over-regulated in some ways. and some could be removed, but I don't have a specific one. Certainly, it is a lot of regulations to deal with when writing these grants.
Yeah.
I think at some point, I would say there's a cost benefit. I think when you get down to very, very small grants, it does not make sense to be doing a lot of monitoring. You know, if you're doing grants that are like $2,000, it's almost not worth it to have that kind of monitoring component. That's going to be more costly than the grant. And at some point, it's just better to play the percentages and realize, yes, 95% of it are going to do exactly what they said they do, and there's a little bit of loss. But I don't have specifics about that. I just have kind of accepted it that I'm not going to be a good force, or it's not probably worth my efforts to try to work on removing regulations. My best is just to deal with it as best I can and understand them as best I can and still be able to maneuver around it. And maybe that's a little bit of job security. I'm not sure. But if there are other people that can remove regulations that are unnecessary, then I'd be all for it. But
so I'm asking you personally,
okay,
if you have a vision for the future of Belfast. You don't live in Belfast.
No, I live in Bangor. Though I do spend a lot of time in my office, to be fair.
Do you have a vision for the future of Belfast? Is it unfettered growth?
No, I would not say it's unfettered growth. I think I want to see good, robust development, not unfettered growth. I want to continue to see a diverse economy, as diverse economy as we can have. I think we're very fortunate that we have, I think, a relatively diverse economy. We have production and manufacturing.
May be changing, though, if this outfit is going to have a half of the budget of the entire town.
Well, it depends how you look at the pie. Is it based on the number of jobs in a certain industry? I think having more production and manufacturing, I think, adds to the diversity of Belfast. I think we're very fortunate that we have production manufacturing that exports. I think it's important to have companies that are going to be exporting things outside of the... It's very important to buy local, but it's also important to have businesses that sell things outside the environs of Belfast. I'm a big fan of, I want to see quality jobs. I think the community does better when more people are making money, when a lot more people are making money than just a few people are making money. And so that's my biggest concern. I want to see jobs that pay well, especially if the city chooses to provide assistance. I think that's an important criteria in terms of the quality of the jobs created, in my opinion.
Of course, a lot of places are looking for employees, and there seems to be a shortage of workers at this point.
Yes, I would say our unemployment rate has dropped. However people consider the unemployment rate, how accurate it truly is. Certainly, the numbers have dropped probably a percentage point over the last year. We had fewer job seekers at our most recent job fair last March. But also a tight labor market means employers may be willing to pay more money. And that's the flip side of supply and demand. And labor usually has been on the losing end when there's been slack in the labor market. But a tight labor market may hopefully result in some gains to those people working at those places.
So you don't believe in unfettered growth?
No. Unfettered growth just sounds terrible.
Sounds terrible.
I would not want to see Belfast covered by every square inch with industrial buildings. No.
Okay. Okay. So it's a balancing act. It's a balancing act,
yes,
isn't it? Belfast has a worker shortage, aging population, housing at a premium. The question is, when will Belfast be big enough? Are we envisioning a city the size of Portland eventually? I mean, are we looking... We could just, like... grow. I mean, New York put together this way.
Without having a specific number, I think Portland would be too big.
Too big.
I think we should, I think we need to grow. I'd like to see 10,000. You know, we're about 7,000. If I had to pick a number, I think there should be a little more growth, and I'd like to see, we want to be welcoming, want people to, whether they just want to visit here, I think that's important. We want people that want to live here, if they want to bring their business here, if they want to start a family here.
So that's 10,000 people.
Just off the top of my head.
That's okay. It's your show.
I think there. I think there's a little bit. I think I would like to see Belfast grow a little bit more.
How many people are in Belfast now?
6,700 is the census figure.
So that's not that much more. Right now it's a small community. I'm thinking about like Quebec City. Have you been there?
Yes, I have.
And they have that inside the wall and then the outside the wall, the unfettered growth outside the wall.
No, I it's something, it's definitely something to consider. We can't be just an industrial community with just industry everywhere, because we have a downtown that should be preserved, because that's part of our character and authenticness. And certainly the natural environment is important as well. But I think there's, I definitely want to see, I'd like to bring more businesses to Belfast, or help businesses grow in Belfast.
If we get to 10,000, are they going to fire you?
Maybe. Hey, then I can say I did such a great job, they fired me.
Maybe you'll be hired in Bucksport.
Yeah, I mean, that's, they're going through their own challenges with the loss of the paper mill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you serve all the people in Belfast, or just the job creators? I'm wondering about homeless people. Are they considered in economic development?
I cannot recall specifically thinking about homeless people in my day job. Certainly, it's not good that we have homeless people, and I think we should do more to support them and help them.
But that's just not in your role.
Well, I haven't been asked, or I haven't taken the initiative to make that a development. I mean, yes, my title is Economic Development Director, but there's, you know, economic and community development are really on the same spectrum. And things that we do to make the community attractive oftentimes are things that make it attractive for business. Businesses.
Yeah, that's kind of the gets to the gist of the question.
Yeah.
What about the individuals? Like, you think of economic development, you think of cash, whereas a lot of people, especially around here in Maine, that actually operate on different economies and, you know, maybe sleep on somebody else's couch or swap things, or.
We certainly want to provide, I think that part of it is we want to provide quality job opportunities. We want to have opportunities for jobs. That does not solve the homeless problem just by having jobs.
Right.
But that's a portion of it, trying to get people employed. Could we do more with the homeless population? Yes, we absolutely could.
Would the homeless be a population you would consider in looking for grant money, or is that outside your purview as economic development director?
Nothing's really outside my purview of economic development, it seems like sometimes. I usually look for the need first for a project, and then look for the funding that would fit with it, instead of the other way around, if there's a grant and then trying to shoehorn a project into it. So if there was a project that I was involved with developing it to, them that would help with the homeless situation, then we'd look for grant money if it existed out there.
I think answer to that has to do with community development. So you're not just developing businesses, you're also developing the community. And if that involves individuals that are struggling, then that would also be within your purview.
Potentially, yes. Yeah.
Cool.
It also depends on what I'm asked to do,
Asks you to do things? Is that the city manager?
I directly report to Joseph Slocum, the city manager, but I also feel
So does he call you? Does he call you in the office and say, Thomas, I want you to look for money for XYZ?
Yes, that has happened before, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, geez, we have a call. Hold on. Okay. Go ahead. You're on the line. Hello?
Hi. I have a question for Thomas.
Yeah.
What sort of things might he be able to do to help the housing shortage inside of the Belfast loop? To possibly is there anything that he can do to because there's a lot of people who commute to Belfast to work from the outskirts. Is there any way that he can help develop some housing inside the area where the jobs are? Hi, Jennifer.
What about public transportation too? Maybe he can do that. Well, we'll get your answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Yes, housing is something that is on the city council's mind. It's at the forefront of their concerns. We've been focused really, I think you had Wayne Marshall on here last week, and you probably talked about housing and what we're doing from a zoning and ordinance perspective. I'm not directly...
You didn't listen to the show?
I'm sorry, no. I better go listen to it. And I know he I'm not as directly involved with that. I think I'm going to be more involved in future steps if to address this, and there's not going to be one silver bullet. So the zoning and ordinance aspect is important. I think we could do more, and I think the council has a level of interest in being more aggressive with tax incentives to develop housing. And I would probably take an important role with that in terms of trying to market that, market those opportunities and connect with housing developers. I see myself, and that could include grants if they do exist in some cases, and continuing to do things like the CDBG housing assistance grant, which is used primarily for existing housing, but still improves the housing stock. So I will probably be assuming a more involved role in that, addressing the housing as we move more out of the zoning and ordinance part of it into more of the...
That makes sense.
But we don't have a developed... I have not presented a plan yet in terms of if we're going to say, look, we're going to offer TIF credit enhancement agreements to housing developers. I haven't developed that plan yet to present to council and get their support and buy-in for that yet. It has not happened yet.
Now, do you ever collaborate with groups like the CAP Agency for Public Transportation? Would you be willing to work with them on... getting grants for different things, you know, to get people moving.
I have worked with Waldo Cap in the past.
You have.
Or certainly have communicated with them on projects. I don't think I've worked directly on the public transportation aspect, but I would be happy to that. I would not shy away from that. I very rarely say, no, I don't. I can't do that because it's not part of my job. I cannot recall saying that.
That's not who
ever.
You are.
Because usually would say, no, it is part of your job. So I would be certainly open to those conversations with Waldo Cap related to public transportation.
Great. And have you looked at cooperatives as a business structure that might work around here?
Cooperatives are very interesting. I have met with,
Jonah Fertig. No?
No. There's a younger gentleman, an older gentleman that I've met with about cooperatives in the past, but...
Oh, excuse me, but we have a phone call on the line. One Michael Hurley.
Has Belfast changed since he was hired? Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I would say it's certainly grown. Certainly we had, if you look at the downtown's the easiest way to visualize it. We had a lot of empty storefronts when I started. Not saying I'm responsible for it, but I think...
take some credit.
There's certainly a lot more activity. I've noticed the peak season of the tourism season extend, including further into the shoulder seasons. We've been able to do some infrastructure projects that maybe we didn't have the capacity to do in the past. And I think that's the important part of not necessarily me, but having the position was we've been able to season some opportunities we weren't able to do before, to do the things that have been on lists or plans or desires of the councilors to be able to do. And a big example is the Front Street reconstruction. So I think we're not perfect, but we've certainly, I think, done more definitely a majority of good things.
And
a lot of good things have happened.
Perfection is a low goal. That's my mantra. Thank you so much for being on the program, Thomas.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thomas Kittredge, Belfast Economic Development Director. And I wanted to tell listeners that next week we will have on the program Alex Almay Beck, who is the executive director of the Gary Owen House, which is a house for homeless veterans here in the area. And the week after that, on the 30th, we will have the mayor, Samantha Parity, on the show, and we'll be talking with her and on and on. Well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.